Mem Beis Amud Aleph, we're up to the Gemara, the second line. So the Gemara asks, "My kamashmalan tinina hamefate nosin shlosha dvarim vehaonas arba hamefate nosin boshes ufegamu kenas mosif alav onas shen nosin asatzar." The question is basically, textually speaking, why did we even need the Mishnah, the opening Mishnah, this parak that we quoted yesterday? The Mishnah seems entirely superfluous. The reason for that is because there was a Mishnah at the end of the previous parak back in Daf Lamites that basically spelled out all of the various types of penalties that are paid for a rapist or a seducer. Right, the Mishnah told us on Lamites that if a man seduces a woman, he has to pay the kenas. In addition, he has to pay the boshes and pagam. And in the event of rape, there's an additional payment for the tsar for the pain he inflicted. So what is our Mishnah adding that we didn't already know? So the Gemara says, no, li'avia itchtrichle. The chiddush of our Mishnah is to teach us that these penalties are paid to the father. So the Gemara says, that's also obvious. Li'avia nami pshita. Midika yoav mefate. Di'iliatzma amai yoav mefate. Midaita ava. The Gemara says, that's also obvious, because one of the categories of penalty is paid by a seducer. So of course a seducer has to pay the girl's father, not the girl, because why on earth would he pay the girl? The girl consented to the relationship. So of course he's not going to pay her. So the Gemara says, no. Amda bedinet shtrichalei plukta de Reb Shimon v'Rabbanan. The chiddush of our Mishnah is about a case of what's called hamada bedin. We briefly touched on this point yesterday in the Mishnah, but basically the machlokas that we referenced in the Mishnah yesterday was whether things change once the girl comes to court. If you remember yesterday we mentioned in the Mishnah that there are all these different cases about, well, what happens if the father died before they came to court? If the father died after they came to court? If the father died before the money was collected or after the money was collected? So that machlokes about whether we look at the time they come to court as a meaningful factor, that machlokes is the chiddush of our Mishnah. That case was not mentioned back on Daf Lamites. That's the thing that's being innovated over here. Okay, the Gemara says, Tanan Hasam. Anasta upitisa is biti, v'hu omer lo anasta v'lo pitisi, mashbiachani v'amar amein v'achar kachoda, chayav, Reb Shimon poter she'ina mishan kenas al piatzmo. Nor quotes the following machlokas. This is based on a Mishnah at the end of Masechah Shavuah. So let's say Reuven comes over to Shimon and says, "You raped or seduced my daughter." And he denies it. And then Reuven says, "I want you to swear to me, you know, in Beis Din with a real shvuah, with Shem Hashem, that you didn't do that." And he swears. And then after he swears, he admits that he was lying, that he really did rape or seduce the daughter. So the question is, what does he do now? So according to the Tanakhama, he's going to be chayav. Now, when we say he's chayav, in other words, that doesn't just mean that he has to now pay the kenas, which of course he does, but he also has to pay an additional fifth penalty, plus he has to bring a carbon shvuah, as we'll talk about throughout the daf. However, according to Reb Shimon, he's totally pater. Why? Because this is a classic example of Mode b'kanas pater. He admitted to owing the kanas, and therefore he's off the hook. So Amrulos, the Chachamim respond to Reb Shimon, Afal pi she'ena mishalim kanas al piatmo, aval mishalim boshes ufegam al piatmo. It's true that by admitting to the kanas, he's exempting himself from paying that, but there still is the boshes and pegam component of it, which is not considered kanas. That's considered to be objectively mamon, and therefore admitting to that is going to obligate him to pay that penalty. Okay. And then Gemara says, Ba'amine abaye me rabba. Ha'omer lachavero anasta upitisa is biti. So the Gemara now has a variation of the previous question. So in this case, Reuven doesn't just accuse Shimon of raping or seducing his daughter. He says, "You raped or seduced my daughter. I took you to court, and that other court said that you're chayav to pay me. You're chayav to pay for the penalties for rape or seduction." Shimon turns around and denies the entire thing. He swears that he was never implicated by a different court, and then after he swears, he admits that he was lying about the whole thing. So the question is, according to Reb Shimon, what is the status of this case? Now again, this is in contrast to the previous case where there's just a normal, you know, argument where Reuven says, "You raped my daughter." Shimon says, "No, I didn't." He swears, and then he admits that he was lying. So in that case, Reb Shimon says that he's putter from paying, because that's the classic example of moda b'kanas putter. The issue here is that Reuven is claiming that the case had already been adjudicated in a different court, and Shimon is now denying the whole thing and then admitting that it actually was adjudicated. So the Gemara has a tzad to say, has a possibility to suggest, maybe even Reb Shimon would agree that this case is somehow considered mamon once it's already been adjudicated in the court. Now, once the court said that you now have to pay X, Y, and Z, perhaps it becomes like mamon, or maybe not. Maybe we still consider this to be kanas. So the Gemara says, Amar le, mamona have you michayav le karmen shua. The Gemara says, you're right, that in this case, even Reb Shimon will concede that we view this payment as mamon, as opposed to kanas, and therefore he's also going to be chayav to bring the carbon for swearing falsely. Okay, so the Gemara then asks, Esi Reb Shimon Omer, Yachol Ha'omer Lachavero, Anastu PT says BT Vuhu Omer Lo Anasti Velo PTC. Hamis Shorcha S Adi Vuhu Omer Lo Hamis Osha Omer Lo Avdo Hipalta S Shini Visi Mesa S Any Vuhu Omer Lo Hipalti Velo Si Mesi Vinish Bava Hoda Yachal Yehichayav Tamud Lomar Vichishba Amiso Befika Don Ovisasumas Yad Ovigazel O Ashakas Amiso O Matsav Hida Vichish Bavinish Bal Shaker Ma Elum Yuchadin Shehin Mamun of Kol Shehin Mamun Yatsu Elu Shehin Kanas. So the Gemara now is questioning its understanding of Rav Shimon. So again, remember, in the previous part of the Gemara, we just established that even Rav Shimon agrees that if the claim is that the case had already been adjudicated in a different court, and they've already established that Shimon really owes money for the rape or seduction, so then that's considered mamon, and if the guy admits to it, and he admits that he lied, he has to pay the kanas, and he also is going to have to bring a karban. So the Gemara now questions this. The Gemara quotes a similar case, where again, Reuven, in other words, either Reuven accuses Shimon of raping or seducing his daughter, and he denies it, or the Gemara has another case where, let's say, Reuven says to Shimon that your ox killed my eved, and he denies it, or Reuven's Eved says to him, you knocked out my eye or tooth, which normally would set an Eved Kanani free, and Reuven denies that. And then what happens, they swear, and in all the cases they admit that they were lying. So it turns out Shimon did rape Reuven's daughter, or Reuven's ox did gore Shimon's Eved, or, you know, Reuven did knock out his Eved's eye or tooth. So I would have said, in these types of cases, that you should be chayav to bring the karban and pay the penalty. So the Gemara says, no. The Gemara quotes a pasuk at the end of Parshas Vayikra that says that when you deal with someone in matters that pertain to collateral, or theft, or, you know, issues that are basically monetary in nature, that's when all these halachos go into effect. The halachos of paying the extra fifth penalty and bringing the karban, that's for regular, normal monetary cases, to the exclusion of cases that involve kenas, like rape or seduction, or the case of goring and killing an eved, or knocking your eved's eye or tooth out. Those cases are not subject to the regular rules of a karban shvua. So the Gemara says, my lav bisha amad badin, lo bisha lo amad badin. The Gemara has a havam, you know, well, maybe these cases are only in other words, we're only talking about scenarios where there was already hamad avadin. In other words, where the case was already adjudicated in court. The Gemara says, no, it's not true. We're talking about a case where these cases had not yet been adjudicated. So the Gemara says, but hang on a second. V'hami dereisha b'sha amad badin, seifa nami b'sha amad badin, dekatani reisha, ing li ala dvarim shemeshamen aleyam esakaren, tashlume kefel tashlume arba v'chamisha v'ha'ones v'hamefate umotzi shem raminayin, tamad lomar umala ma'al riba. So the Gemara says, but we've already established that the former part of the Mishnah is in fact discussing cases where there was already hamad abedin. In other words, how do we know that? So the Gemara says, because I only know that these halachos of bringing a karban and paying the extra penalty should apply to regular, normal monetary cases. How do I know that the halachos of the karbanos should also extend to various cases that include kenasos, like paying kefel if you're caught stealing, or paying dalad vehei if you slaughtered or sold the animal that you stole, or ones mor mefate, or the cases of moti shemra, where you claim that your wife is a virgin and she wasn't. How do I know that these cases are also subject to the regular rules of bringing a karban shvua? So the Gemara derives that from the amplification in Parshas Vayikra, where it says uma'ala ma'al. The Torah uses a double expression, uma'ala ma'al, which literally means that you committed a trespass. Why does the Torah use that double language? That indicates that the halachos of bringing a karban and paying the extra penalty and all the things we keep on mentioning apply even by kenas. So the Gemara now has to clarify. So hechi dami, idelo amad badin kfeila mi'ika, elapshita bisha amad badin, umidereisha bisha amad badin, seifa nami bisha amad badin. So the Gemara says, it can't be that we're talking about a case where there was no hamad badin. In other words, where the case had not yet been adjudicated in court. Because the only time that you pay, for example, kefel, right, for stealing is once you come to court. So let's say I stole from someone, and I get caught, and I come to court, so only at that point do I pay kefel. You don't pay kefel the second you steal. You only pay kefel once you're caught stealing in court. So obviously, by definition, we're talking about a case where you're standing in court where the case is being adjudicated, and if that's the case, so then presumably the latter case, in other words, where we're dealing with kenasos, like for rape or seduction, or for killing the eved, all the cases that we keep on mentioning, so presumably that should also be a scenario where you're standing in court, which would seem to undermine Reb Shimon's theory, because remember, in other words, the Gemara wanted to claim earlier that even according to Reb Shimon, once you have ha'amad abadin, once you're standing in court, once the case is adjudicated in court, then everything changes. And even Reb Shimon agrees that it's considered to be mamon and nakanas. But from our Gemara, it sounds like it's not the case. It sounds like from our Gemara that even when there's ha'amad abadin, Reb Shimon is still going to disagree and still going to exempt you from bringing a karban. To which the Gemara says, no. Amar le yachilma l'shanuy l'cha, reisha b'sha'amad badin v'seifa b'shalo amad badin v'chula Reb Shimon hi, v'shinuy d'chika l'mishanin l'cha, t'him kein amarta li lisne reisha Reb Shimon omer, o lisne seifa divir Reb Shimon. The Gemara says, I could have given you a very dochak, a very difficult answer. What would the difficult answer have been? I could have simply said, yeah, the first case in the Mishnah is talking about a case where they were standing in Bez Din, the case was adjudicated in Bez Din, and the latter case involving all the Kenassos is talking about where they were not in Bez Din. And again, if that distinction were true, the Gemara said that we would have said that the entire Mishnah reflects the opinion of Reb Shimon, and it's just a question of whether you're standing in court. If you're not standing in court, Reb Shimon views it as a Kenas. If you are standing in court already and it's been adjudicated, then Reb Shimon views it as a regular monetary case. Yeah. 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 No, so again, remember, the Rabbanan disagree with that premise. That was the whole point back in the previous summit, where the Rabbanan assume that in all these cases you're going to have to pay, even if you're not standing in court. It's only Reb Shimon who says that it's a kenas, and who says Mudah b'kenas pater, and then we had a machlokes, we had said, well, within Reb Shimon, he agrees that if you're standing in court, the case was already adjudicated, even he agrees that it's considered to be mamon, and then you're going to be chayav to pay. So now, the Gemara is trying to point out textually if that last point, that last caveat is really true. So the Gemara says, from a textual vantage point, it's very difficult to say that, you know, well, the first part is where they were standing in court, and the second part is where they were not standing in court, and it's all reflecting Reb Shimon, because if that were true, then the Mishnah somewhere should have said, you know, Reb Shimon says, or these are the words of Reb Shimon. It should have basically encapsulated the statement as reflecting Reb Shimon's position throughout the entire Mishnah, instead of just that last detail in the Mishnah. The fact that we're not attributing seemingly the entire Mishnah to Reb Shimon seems to undermine this theory from a textual perspective. So the Gemara says, you're right. Elakula b'sha'amad b'din, v'reisha rabbanan v'seifa Reb Shimon. The Gemara says, you're right. Rather, you have to suggest that all the cases in the Mishnah are talking about hamad b'din, where you're already in court and the case was adjudicated in court. And this is, in fact, the machlokas between Reb Shimon and the Rabbanan. This is the machlokas that we keep on referencing back to the previous Amud, where the Rabbanan say that you know, basically, you know, it's considered to be mamon across the board. And Reb Shimon is going to suggest that when there's hamad b'din, so maybe, in fact, he's going to disagree. In other words, we were under an assumption before that, well, you know, that even Reb Shimon agrees that once you come to court, everything changes and everything's considered mamon and it's no longer kenas. Maybe that's not true. Maybe Reb Shimon disagrees even there. So that maybe gufa is the machlokas in our Mishnah. In other words, whether Reb Shimon, in other words, seemingly Reb Shimon's going to disagree with the Rabbanan even in that case. However, the Gemara points out, umodina lecha le'inyan karban shvua derachmana patre mi v'chichish v'chikamina mamon ha'ave leho risha levanav. But the Gemara points out that Reb Shimon agrees that when it comes to bringing this karban, when, again, all the cases that we mentioned earlier where the guy, you know, basically admits that he was lying, so the Torah is going to exempt you in these cases based on the word v'chichesh. Again, v'chichesh is that pasuk for the end of Parashat Vayikra. The word v'chichesh literally means that you're dealing with someone. You deal with someone in matters involving collateral or theft or finding a lost object, all the examples that the pasuk in Vayikra mentioned. So the Gemara says when it comes to the halachos of offering a karban shvua, the Torah exempts you from bringing that karban. But, in other words, so the question is, so then, in what respect do we consider this to be mamon? We only consider it to be mamon insofar as the father is going to bequeath it, he's going to give it over as a yerusha to his children. So for example, right, normally the halacha is that, let's say there's some sort of a kenas that's owed to a father. Let's say, for example, Shimon stole from Reuven, and he owes Reuven kefal, and then Reuven dies, so the kefal does not go to his children. Again, once he already received the kefal and it's in his possessions, then obviously it does. But, you know, but as long as Shimon has not yet paid up the kefal, that money doesn't go to the Yorshim, right? Yorshim only inherit mamon, not kenas. So the Gemara says, in this respect, we consider these payments like mamon insofar as that they're going to be bequeathed over to his children, but in terms of offering a karban, we consider it more like kenas, and we're going to exempt him from bringing a karban shvua. Okay. Then the Gemara says, ACV, Reb Shimon Omer, Im lo hispika ligvosad shemesa av harehin shal atzma, v'iyomar mamon havei lehorisho levanav la'atzma amai da'achin boyim yahavei. So the Gemara says like this. We mentioned in the Mishnah yesterday that according to Reb Shimon, if let's say, for example, they didn't get around to collecting the penalties for the girl who was raped or seduced until the father died. So the Mishnah said that according to Reb Shimon, the girl gets to keep those penalties for herself. But the problem is, if you're going to argue that those penalties are basically mamon, they're not really kenas. We mentioned in the Gemara, right, in the previous lines, that they're considered mamon insofar as bequeathing them, you know, giving them over in Yerusha to your children. So then why on earth is the girl entitled to getting the kenas if the father died? That should just pass over to his children. Because remember, the Gemara is assuming that these things are basically considered to be mamon and not kenas for the purposes of Yerusha. So the Gemara says, you're right. Amar Rava, Haimilsak Shaiba Rabba Rav Yosef Esrin Vesart in Shinvala Ifrak, Adi Yosef Rav Yosef Beresha Uparke, Shaini Hassam, the Amar Kravin Asan, Haisha Shochivi Mahlavi Anaracha Mishim Kasef, Lozichsa Torah La'av Elamishas Nasina. The Gemara says that Rabba and Rav Yosef struggled with this question for 22 years. They couldn't figure out the answer to this question. Why is it that the girl gets the kenas according to Reb Shimon and not the brothers if the father died? It should be passed over as Yerusha, as we keep pointing out, it's considered mamon. Until one day Rav Yosef finally realized what the answer was, because the pasuk says that the man who raped or seduced the girl has to pay the father, has to give the father the 50 shekel. The Torah uses the word vinasan, and he gives. So the Gemara derives from that word vinasan that the Torah only gave the father the right to collect that kenas for the girl's rape or seduction from the time of Nesina, once the money was actually given over. That which Rabbah said, that we view these types of penalties as mamon when it comes to the laws of passing them down in Yerusha, that was only discussing other types of penalties. Penalties for, you know, goring and killing someone's eved, or for knocking out your eved's eye. In other words, all the other examples of kenasos that we mentioned. But when it comes to the case of rape and seduction in particular, since the Torah uses the word vinasan, that's an indication that the father is only entitled to the kenas once the money is actually given over, which means that if the father died before the money was collected, according to Reb Shimon, the girl gets it and not the brothers, because it was never, because the father was never entitled to it before the money was actually handed over. So the Gemara then pushes back. Well, what about the law of paying 30 shekel if the ox gores and kills the eved? You have to pay the master 30 shekel for the death of the eved. So the Gemara says, does that mean to say that the money is only given over from the time of Nesina? In other words, let's say, for example, Reuven's ox gored and killed Shimon's eved, and then before Reuven got a chance to pay Shimon, Shimon died. So does that mean that Shimon's yorshim are not entitled to the 30 shekel? The Torah uses the word yitain, which seems to, you know, also lead us to believe that maybe that's only considered to be payment from the, in other words, once it's actually given over. So the Gemara says, no, yitain l'chud v'nasan l'chud. There are two different terminologies, as opposed to the pasuk in Parshas Kisetze that talks about the payment of the rapist or the seducer, where the Torah uses the word vinasan. That word connotes that the father is only entitled to the money once it's actually given over, and not just when it's theoretically collectible. Whereas here in Parshas Mishpatim, when the Torah talks about goring and killing someone's eved, the Torah uses the word yitain, which is a different connotation, which doesn't necessarily imply from the time the money is given over. So the Gemara then pushes back again. Ihachi tamad lomar v'chichesh tamad lomar v'nasan mibayile. The Gemara says, if what we're saying now is correct, that the reason that we know that the payments for rape and seduction differ from other forms of kenasos is because of that word vinasan that we keep on referencing, right? The fact that the Torah says that the father is only entitled to that payment once it's actually given over, then why doesn't the Gemara say that? The Gemara should have said that word vinasan is the proof that the cases of onas and mefata are different than other types of kenasos. Why does the Gemara focus on the word v'chichesh? V'chichesh was that word we referenced from Parshas Vayikra, where we noted that when it comes to regular types of monetary payments, that's subject to a carbon shvua, but kenasos are not. That word v'chichesh is immaterial. We're trying to focus now on the word vinasan. Why doesn't the Gemara use that word instead? So the Gemara says, no, Amar Rava ki itchrich v'chichesh kigon she'amda badin uvag Rava mesa dehasam ki kayaris avia minad idak kayaris. The Gemara says, no. The Gemara says the case is as follows. That let's say the girl was standing in court after being raped or seduced, and then before she got a chance to collect the money, she became a bogera, so now she's 12 and a half, and then the girl died before actually getting the money. So that word v'chichesh teaches me that the father now inherits his daughter. In other words, if his daughter died after she became a bogeres, the father is now entitled to collecting the penalties of the ones and mefata that otherwise would have gone to the daughter. Now, they would have gone to the daughter normally because she's now a bogeres and she's considered independent, but once she dies, so that penalty now is going to belong to the father. So the Gemara says, Ihachi yatsu elu shein kenas mamonu. The Gemara says, but if that's the case, then also what the Gemara told us earlier is also very misleading, because earlier the Gemara told us that all of these examples, which are kenasos, which are penalties, are exempted from the rules of a carbon shvua and paying the extra penalties that we mentioned. But according to what we're saying now, this is no longer considered a case of kenas. This is considered to be a regular case of mamon. Why is that? Because once you're standing in court, once your case is adjudicated, as we keep on pointing out, that is now considered to be a case of mamon. To which the Gemara says, you're right, Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak yatsu elu she'ikaran kenas. Even though, technically speaking, once you have ha'amada b'din, once a case is adjudicated in court, technically things change and now it's really considered to be mamon. But fundamentally speaking, the payments for onus and mefata in their core, in their root, are basically kanas. In other words, yes, it's true that there are scenarios where that can kind of, you know, morph into mamon, but basically at their core, the payments for onus and mefata are essentially kanas, and that's why the Gemara uses that terminology. Okay, then the Gemara asks again, ACV, Reb Shimon Poter, She'eno Mishalim Kanas Al Piatzmo, Taima Delo Amad Bedin, Ha'amad Bedin De Mishalim Al Piatzmo, Kerben Shua Nami Michayav. So the Gemara says like this, that Reb Shimon exempts the person from paying the kanas when he admits to it. Now, the Gemara explains, that's only true when there's no Hamad Bedin. So let's say, without coming to court, Reuven comes and admits that he raped or seduced Shimon's daughter, so Reb Shimon says that he's putter from paying for that kanas. The implication is that if there was already Hamad Bedin, if he was already in court, and then he turns around and admits, so not only does he now have to pay, because you know, because at this point his admission is meaningless, he's already in court, but the Gemara says, in addition to that, if let's say he initially denies it, and then he admits that he was lying, he also has to bring the carbon shua that we keep on referencing. So the Gemara says no. The Gemara says, Reb Shimon l'divreim d'rabbanan ka'amar lehu. L'didi afal gav d'amad badin raka mana patre mi v'chichesh ela l'didchu odu li miaz hecha d'lo amad badin d'chi katava k'nasa katava umode b'k'nas pater. So Reb Shimon says like this to the rabbanan. He says, according to me, even if there's hamad badin, even if you're standing in court and they're adjudicating the case, the Torah still exempts you from paying the k'nas or bringing the carbon from the word v'chichesh. But according to you, the rabbanan, at least admit to me, says Reb Shimon, that where there's no hamad badin, where they're not standing in court, where the case is not being adjudicated in court, that when Reuven is demanding that Shimon pays, what he's essentially demanding is that he pays the kanas, because it's a penalty for raping or seducing his daughter, and then when Shimon turns around and admits that he raped or seduced the daughter, so we should invoke the principle of modi b'kanas pater, and that should exempt you from bringing the karban. So the Gemara says, no, v'rabbanan tzavri ki katava boshesu v'gam katava. The Rabbanan will turn around and respond and say, no, that in fact, Reuven is not demanding that Shimon pays him the kanas. If that were the case, then once Shimon admits to the kanas, he's exempt from paying because of modi b'kanas pater. But instead, he's demanding that he pays him the boshes of pagam. Boshes of pagam is not kanas. Boshes of pagam is regular mamon. It's a normal, in other words, it's just a normal monetary obligation you have to pay for shaming the girl and bringing shame to the family name. So the Gemara asks, b'mai kamiflege? Amar of papa, Reb Shimon savar, lo shavik inish midi de kits, v'sava midi de lo kits, v'rabbanan savri, lo shavik inish midi de chimode be'la miftar, v'sava midi de chimode be miftar. The Gemara explains that the machlokas basically is as follows, that according to Reb Shimon, it doesn't make any sense that a person is going to go and try and claim or get money for something which is subjective, right? As we pointed out already this week, boshes and pagam is completely subjective. It depends on the stature of the family, on the stature of the girl, or whether she's a virgin, all these different factors. So that's totally subjective, whereas the payments for the actual rape or seduction is just a fixed amount of 50 shekel. So according to Shimon, it's less likely that you're going to go after something which is subjective versus something which is a fixed amount. Whereas according to the Rabbanan, it's the exact opposite. The Rabbanan say that if you admit to the rape or seduction, you're going to be exempt from paying that 50 shekel because of modi b'kanas pater. So why on earth would you try to go after money where the guy can just admit that he did it and then be exempted from the money, instead go after boshes and pagam, where if he admits, he still has to pay. So that's the machlokas. That's the issue at hand. According to the Gemara says that machlokas between Rav Shimon and the Rabbanan is basically what's the easier, which payment is easier to obtain? Is it easier to obtain the fixed payment of the kanas in contrast to boshes and pagam, which is subjective? Or is it easier to obtain the payment of boshes and pagam, which is not subject to admission, where even if you admit, you still have to pay, versus the kanas, where once you admit, you're going to be exempted from paying.